and you're listening to DDI on Autism on 103.9 FM, keeping an eye on autism and giving a voice to its Long Island community. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Romas, continuing my conversation with Connie Senior, LMSW, an assistant coordinator of sex education and clinical curriculum development at YAI. Thank you again, Connie. This conversation is an important one. And I just want to kind of begin with just something that is coming out of a study that caught my eye. And just, it's a direct quote. Those with more social skills training, more exposure to different life experiences, and more opportunities to function socially can be expected to demonstrate more social competencies. And that seems very straightforward, and it is, and it's kind of intuitive, but I think it converges nicely on this conversation of education in relationship to sexuality. And let's talk a little bit about that, Connie, because I know you agree with me that in order for people to be safe and navigate this minefield of concern, there has to be training.
Absolutely. You know, when we look at where young people, where we all learned about social skills, we learned it by, you know, going out, family, friends, and today, where are people learning their social skills? From movies, mm-hmm. Music videos, from reality shows, from porn, from places where it isn't correct. So people with disabilities often will copy those things, then they go into different places and they think it's okay. And when they display these behaviors, then they're then looked at or they're being targeted. But the thing is, nobody taught them. So it is so important that we do teach what's legal and what's illegal, that we do teach what the socially acceptable behavior is in different places. Social skills should be taught in location and by occasion, because the socially acceptable skills in a bar is not the same socially acceptable skills in a movie.
Right. So what I'm hearing, and I think this is such an important point that you're making, that the kind of behavior, or any kind of social behavior, but certainly behavior around sexuality, is contextual. The where and the when and the timing of everything, really those cues, those social cues are essential if our responses are going to make sense and be both legal and ethical and appropriate. So there's a contextual component to sexual skill training.
Absolutely. You know, how do we greet each other? How do we give a compliment? You know, many things are we've kind of picked up, but people with disabilities, often that's the challenge in picking those things up and knowing when it's okay to do it and when it's not okay to do it. And often that's how they end up getting into sticky situations.
Well, I think that's right. And what I think is so critical here is this idea of being able to understand and recognize cues that are socially the social standards for behavior. And I think the population that we're talking about right now really struggles with that, don't you, Connie? That this idea of being able to accurately read cues could be a bit of a problem.
Absolutely. And especially people on the autism spectrum, where it's challenging to read that facial expression or that body language and not realizing when that may not be a situation you want to go into. That may not be a person who you want to speak to, or somebody who won't say no, won't say, you know, no, I'm not interested in going out with you. They'll say things like, you know, I may be busy. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, maybe later. So none of that says no.
Pretty
so the
good.
Person not understanding that may still go back asking and end up stalking the person, not realizing that the person actually said no, but in other terms.
What's interesting to me, Connie, about this is that these same concerns and challenges are you know, very critical. They're threaded throughout the neurotypical world, every office setting, all we have to do is read the news. But it seems like it's amplified on behalf of amplified in relationship to people with cognitive disabilities.
Yes, it is. And, you know, the playing field is not equal. So when coworkers can play around and they understand that they're playing around, often with society, society still has a stigma against people with disabilities. So someone who doesn't have a disability may be more accepted, whereas someone with, it's not accepted, and then that's reported, and here is someone who just wants to fit in, now someone has reported them as sexual harassment of, you know, having made them uncomfortable.
So that's where this gets a little bit, dicey and fraught with some real concern, because, you know, sexuality converges on legal issues and legal barriers. And if the people we're supporting get this wrong, in addition to being vulnerable to exploitation, they are become vulnerable to criminal consequences.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, statistics have shown that many, and I, you know, quote unquote, perpetrators actually didn't even know that what they were doing was wrong.
Oh, that's so interesting. That's really important for our listeners and for all of us to consider, because usually when we think in terms of, you know, exploitation and the challenges of sexuality in relationship to this population, we think of our people as largely as potential prey, and that's often is the case, but they can also be misinterpreted as predators simply because they didn't understand.
Absolutely. You know, when you look at, and one of the things I always talk about in some trainings is, you know, someone slaps someone on the butt.
Right.
If someone is an avid sports fan, how often do you see that going out on the basketball court, on the football field, in a lot of sporting activities? That means good job. Go in there.
Sure.
Do your best.
Sure.
So someone else who may do it just to tell someone it's a good job, now that becomes sexual harassment. It becomes inappropriate. It becomes offensive, right? And them not even understanding that it's for the football field.
Right.
Not for the office.
Again, this larger issue of context. And, you know, I think that's a particularly good example, because so many of the people that DDI works with who are on the spectrum struggle with what are potentially concrete conceptualizations and interpretations of behavior and the world around them. And that's why your example is a good one, for someone to witness that and simply see that as a display of maybe congratulations or affection, and then inappropriately generalize that to a non-sports setting, all of a sudden now they're subject to all this kind of reprimand and you know, they're suddenly subject to a lot of disapproval.
Yes. It's so many times we do see it, and that's why teaching is so important. Social sexual education is so important. Doing role plays, you know, having them go through the actual situation and teaching the verbiage for it, the language for it, because we sometimes forget that because a lot of people with developmental disabilities are experienced poor, so their vocabulary is poor, they may not know how to express that which they're trying to say.
So let's talk a little bit about the language of that. How do parents and how do clinicians impart an understanding around the language here? Is it through just modeling, or is there any kind of didactic training? How do we bring this forth?
I think it's in using things like movie clips. It's using things like YouTube and different social scenarios, having them watch it, having them talk about it, teaching what's socially acceptable, what's not socially acceptable, because it needs to be something experiential, something that they are seeing, something that they want to be a part of, and then teaching them the language around it.
I think that's really something for us to really kind of consider in a deep way, this idea of experiential learning. And certainly that's how the biggest messages of our lives seem to land with an imprint. It's one thing to say something to someone, it's another thing for that person to really kind of wrap their heads around in an experiential way. And it's funny what you said too about, you know, movies and potentially maybe YouTube and watching people, because isn't that really how we all basically learn how to navigate in this world? But for people with disabilities, cognitive disabilities, some of those examples have to be made more salient.
Yes. Yes, it does. It and that's where the role play comes into, you know, the role play comes into play. I know we were going to talk about consent, and YI has a DVD called Sexually Speaking, and in that DVD, they're role play different action, something like just wanting to be touched, giving a hug. How do you tell someone that you don't want them to hug them without being mean?
You know, I got to tell you, Connie, this is really too important to stop. Let's continue our, if you don't mind staying with me a little while, let's continue our conversation because we really are just scratching the surface. I want to talk about, you know, boundaries and informed consent. And so if you don't mind staying with us a little bit longer, there's just too much to for us to consider. My guest is Connie Senior, LMSW, Assistant Coordinator of Sex Education and Clinical Curriculum Development. The conversation is definitely going to continue next week. We have a lot to go over, and we've just barely scratched the surface. Thank you, Connie. You're listening to DDI on Autism on 103.9 FM.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.